Eli, obviously, 10-year anniversary of TIFF, so congratulations.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
I was going to say, I mean, what does TIFF mean to you as a person?
Well, TIFF, for me, it was where I was born as a director. You know, before that, there was, I always say there was my life before TIFF and then life after. And it was that screening of Cabin Fever at Midnight Madness that got the big sale of the festival and that really launched my career in Hollywood. So I'll never forget how warm and welcoming the audience was and how open they were to new directors. That's what's so cool about it. You know, a lot of festivals you go to, it's the big star directors and movie stars that have all the buzz. And while that's certainly the case at any festival, it's really great that audiences still come out and pack the house for a movie that's completely new with a new director.
And Nicholas, what's your experience been so far?
I love it. Like, I have been a huge fan of this festival, and I love Midnight Madness. So actually, for me, having the movie premiering here is like a dream come true, for real. Like, and I have heard that the energy of the audience is amazing. So I really want to be there tonight and see what happens.
Well, the fact that this is a disaster film to the bloodiest kind, I want to get your thoughts because there's been so many disaster films out there. What did you guys think for yourselves? And okay, there have been a lot. How can we make this stand out differently? I think one of the big things is just where you guys start, where all the trouble happens, which of course is underground.
Well, the place where we started was that modern disaster movies are about the spectacle and they're huge CG budgeted movies. You know, they're $200 million films, and we were doing a movie for far less than that. We wanted to make a movie that was more like the 70s, where you really, there's no CG. It's real destruction. And we were talking about ideas of what to do, and the earthquake hit in Chile. And when Nicholas told me about what happened, his description, that it actually hit at 3:34 in the morning on the Saturday night. That was the last Saturday of summer, and everyone was in the clubs, in the bars, drinking and partying. And next thing you know, you're being crushed to death by speakers and hands are being chopped off. We thought we don't have to look any further than reality to make it, you know, to find our story.
Yeah, it's like a drunk 2012 in a way, you know. It's nice. It's that version. No, but all those movies, they are always like, they are movies that I love. Let's say Cloverfield, you know, or even 2012. You know, but they are all based on things that they are not going to happen, you know. And here we're talking about something that actually happened. And that I was part of it. I was there. I lived there in Santiago, Chile, and it was horrifying. So I think that the aspect that this movie have that the other movies don't have is that it's based on true events, and most of the things that you see on screen actually happen. So I think that that's really horrific.
Also, I gotta add, when you use that word horrific, is what happens to certain people. I mean, like I said, these guys were drenched with blood throughout this whole film. Do you think it was a little too much, or why was that important to really push that aspect of the film?
It's real. Like, everything that you see in the movie, it's real. And there were things that they were more hardcore that we didn't even try to shoot because they were so insane that you can't even wrap your head around it. Like, the thing about this movie is that everything, like, the curfew, the looting, like, the people escaping from prisons, all that happened for real. And Santiago, Chile, is a very modern city. It's like Toronto, you know, and everybody's on Twitter. And suddenly, we're making a movie about what will happen to this generation that is constantly connected to everything. And suddenly, you don't have information, you know. You don't know what's going on every 2 minutes. You don't have Twitter. You don't have your Facebook. I realized that during that night, I realized that I didn't know my mom's phone number. You know, when my cell phone died, I was like, I don't know my mom's phone number. You know, I don't know how to get to her house because my GPS is not working. You know, that's how dumb we are now that we rely so much on all that. So I think that that's I don't know if the cool thing about the movie, but it's we try to talk about that. You know, it's like we try to talk about how this generation is a real disaster. You know, how they would react. So I think that's really, really interesting.
Can you guys describe your collaboration, how you met, and kind of the origins of the script in terms of, like, your writing process?
Well, I saw Nicolas's first film, Promedio Rojo, at the Los Angeles Film Festival, and he'd made it when he was 19 or 20, and it's a really, really funny teen comedy. So I'd been a big fan of his work for years, and we became close friends. So, you know, the writing process was us just figuring out you know, what was the story we're going to tell.
But we realized that we had the same, like, that we were talking the same language, you know, that we were talking geek, you know, and geek is an international language.
And we'd been on the same film festival circuit and had the same friends and same influences. And
we hooked up with the same girl.
Yeah. In one case.
Different years.
But it's
different
a,
bed.
It's, but, you know, we're obviously, you know, good friends. And so we were talking about writing, you know, I wanted him to do a movie that was, you know, he's known for his teen comedies. His Que Pena series are huge blockbusters in Chile. And then all the films are on Netflix now, I should tell listeners. But they're really, really, really funny. And I thought, when, you know, but he loves horror movies. And I thought, when are you going to do something that's, like, really scary and intense? And we thought this is the perfect way to cross over. And really after, you know, Last Exorcism, I'm now in a position where I can get movies financed on my name in a certain space. And we thought, let's just make a great, scary, fun movie.
And Nicholas, what is your creator? What is Eli like as a creator partner?
Eli is great because I'm so, well, I made a trilogy of romantic comedies in my
fuck
country.
My life.
Yeah, Fuck My Life, Fuck My Wedding, and Fuck My Family, now that we just wrapped. And we used to call this movie Fuck My Hostel, because the first part of the movie is like one of my romantic comedies, and then the rest of the movie is like an Eli Roth movie. So we mix our sensibilities. And in a way, I think that everything has to do with the fact that we're friends. Like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, I need to call the studio and ask them questions about this, you know? Like, we had a lot of freedom, and it was all about, like, spitballing ideas. We hung out a lot with Eli. Like, we went to a lot of parties, and when Eli came to Santiago, when we just had the idea of making an earthquake movie, he was like, you know what? I'm going to go there. And because that's the kind of guy that Eli is, you know? He's like, he's no bullshit. He's like, I'm going, and he suddenly appeared in Santiago. He was there for a week, and it was a really fun week and a really crazy week. And all the, and everything that you see in the movie, in a way, was inspired in our experience, you know, like going out to parties. Like, all of that came from there. And we started writing the script right away, you know, because we were like, there are so many things, you know. We have enough material for 10 movies, you know, after that 7-day trip, so.
Were there any real scary moments for you guys during this filming? Because watching all that stuff falling on people, and there is no way nobody got injured in some way by accident.
Thankfully, no one got seriously injured. Everyone got cuts and scrapes. But, you know, I remember we were doing that scene where the club's falling apart. And, you know, you have these 19-year-old girls in heels and guys that are young guys. And I said to Nicholas, I was like, wow, those are all stunt people, right? He's like, well, yeah. Well, no, I mean, they worked with a stunt coordinator. Well, it's fine. Don't worry, gringo. Just close your eyes. So, you know, when we were watching that, we closed our eyes. And, like, after the take, we're like, is everyone okay? And we had, you know, we're obviously
or
very
the
safe.
Moment,
we
the
did
moment
it.
With the gun.
Oh, my gosh. There's a scene where a woman fires a gun at an actor. And, you know, we were about to shoot it. And I said, you know, is that a full blank load? Because the blanks discharge. I remember from Bastards with firing the guns, you're covered in that stuff. And there was an actor that put a blank to his head, gone with a blank, and killed himself.
That
so
was back in the 70s.
Yeah, back in the 70s. Yeah. So there's a big thing. I said, you know, is it safe? Are we at a safe distance? And the AD goes, here, take it. And he handed the gun to the actor. And the boom, shot at his stomach. And he's like, yeah, it's fine. All right, roll camera. Like, it was that simple. And I was just in shock. And I was like, ah. And they were like, oh, gringo, so worried about safety.
Oh, what's the advantage, guys, of working kind of outside the Hollywood system where obviously insurance concerns would probably prevent you from having made this film. What are the advantages of working in Chile where maybe, I'm not going to say it's certainly as professional, but maybe a little bit looser? Like, what are the advantages of that situation?
Yeah, it's the difference between being in a punk rock band, you know, than being in a opera, you know. Sure. That's for me, you know. I think that everything that they do in the U.S. is like, they follow the rules. Everything has to be done in a certain way. It's very hard to break the rules. And in Chile, because of necessity, we tend to break the rules all the time. You know, I'm used to shot my movies really fast. The Fuck My Life series, you know, the first one, we shot that movie in 11 days. Mm. You know, so we're used to go really fast and to make things happen. So even when we're shooting what was really horrifying, like for real, when we shot the earthquake sequence, everything that happened there was like for real. Like, things were falling down for real, and we had 5 cameras shooting at the same time. And every time that I say cut, I was like, is everybody okay? And everybody's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, you know. But I had to come. Like there is a scene where a policeman is on fire, and I had to come because we were shooting, and he was like, you know what? Maybe I don't know. It was the first time that he was doing that, so I had to convince him. You know, and then I was like, I just convinced a guy to light himself on fire. I don't know if that's, you know. And then we shot the scene and he was okay, you know. But that was a really, like, for me as a director, it's like, it's okay, you know, to light yourself on fire. Don't worry.
I think most interesting about this movie is basically we're talking about the human psyche on this.
Totally.
Where people, I mean, four of us are sitting here, we're having a conversation.
Yeah.
If an earthquake happened, the world was just going into disaster. How would each person be affected?
And
that's
if
we're going to save, or am I going to try to save myself and do something to you, or vice versa?
And that's the question: is you're running by a building and you hear a crying baby, what do you do? And then if the building could collapse, it's like that's what we said the movie's about: moral choices, where each person at each level is tested to see what choice they make in that situation. And I'm always fascinated in all my films in some way about the collapse of society and watching. You know, this is the literal and figurative collapse of society, and to watch how people react to me is fascinating. And that's what was the fun of really taking the time to build up the characters. I love that all the stuff that seems like a huge problem in your life, once an earthquake hits, none of it matters. It's all about survival.
Yeah, that happened in Chile, you know, and it's crazy because 9 months after the earthquake, there was like a baby boom, you know, like there were so many babies born after because it was like, the world is going to end. Let's fuck, you know? Like, what are we supposed to do?
You know, you just got yourself a new movie right there. The world's going to end, so let's fuck.
Let's fuck, yeah. It could be part of the Fuck My Life series.
Selena Gomez obviously has a cameo, and she was just here for Spring Breakers,
yeah,
as well as Hotel Transylvania. So she's...
Movies in the festival.
Three movies in the festival.
She's
obviously cool.
Kind of going into more adult roles, and it's a small part, but... Talk about getting her involved, working with her, and why do you think she wanted to do this film, given how extreme it is, certainly compared to what she's done in the past?
Well, Selena, it was never planned. I mean, so it's truly a cameo. It's really like a walk-on cameo, where she's been a fan of my movies, and, you know, obviously I'm not a huge Wizards of Waverly Place fan, but I am a fan of hers. I think she's a great, great person. I think she has tremendous talent, and she's very driven, and she's very smart. And we had, you know, we'd great meetings, and you know, talking about what collaborating on a project, and actually her people were trying to set up a meeting, and I said, well, you know, I'm in Santiago, and then we found out that she's coming to Santiago, and I said, why don't you come by the set after your concert? So she came by after her concert, and we hung out. Actually, the night before her concert, she came to the set, and we hung out and had a great time, and she just hadn't been on set. She hadn't been shooting. She'd been doing her music, and it'd been almost a year since she'd shot anything. And she's like, I like being on set. I miss it. And we said, why don't we just do a scene? Well, let's write something. Let's write something that's fun, that works in the story, that's not just like a throwaway because she was in town. And so we wrote the scene, and we realized we found a way to make it work. And she came by after her concert the next night. I mean, she was amazing. She just came in, picked her own clothes. We had different clothing options. And she had fun with hair and makeup, and the crew just loved her. And we had so much fun. The first take, she nailed it.
Yeah, it was the first take.
It was so organic, as if we had planned it from the beginning. It couldn't have turned out better.
Yeah, and I was like, you know what? Let's make a romantic comedy. We have to make a romantic comedy after this, you know? Like,
well, I was going to ask, are you guys going to work again together? Any other plans?
We're already writing 15 different things at once together. And Nicholas is going to produce my next film, The Green Inferno, that I'm shooting down in Chile. We're going to use the whole Aftershock crew. It's such a great experience. I want to shoot one there.
We call it Chile. Basically.
Yeah, can you talk about that, Eli, a little bit? I mean, with the return to the director's chair after Hostel 2, why did you move away from directing and obviously producing and lighting? Sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, I actually had a great experience shooting in Toronto in my series Hemlock Grove.
Right.
You know, shot the first episode. It was terrific, and the series is still shooting now. But, you know, after Hostel 2, I realized I'd gone back to back and just worked my whole life towards one thing, and I was a little bit burnt out, you know, and I just needed to take a break and, you know, sort of reassess some things, and these opportunities came up. You know, the opportunity came up to play the Bear Jew, and I really wanted to do it. I said, I can't do two things at once. If I'm going to do this and really hold my own side by side with Brad Pitt and these great actors, I've really got to take this seriously and push myself in a way I never had. And, you know, it worked out great. It was fun, and then it was an incredible experience. And from that, I did Last Exorcism, which is a project I was very passionate about, and I really wanted that to succeed. And from those two films, I've actually... You know, then we just started writing Aftershock, and that just happened in Man with the Iron Fist with RZA. You know, I just sort of go with
the
energy
Green
of
Inferno.
Green Inferno. It's not that
Hemlock.
It's not that I stopped directing. It's that all the other stuff that I was writing got going and producing got going, and I want to be there for it. You know, I wanted to be on set with RZA in China every day, really helping him out. And
Eli was, yeah, that's the thing, you know. Like, of course, Eli is the lead of Aftershock, but he was every day on set, and he was really helpful, you know, because, like, I have comedy instinct, but when in terms of horror, you know, it was like every time that I had a question, Eli was there, you know, he was very supportive, and that was really cool for me, you know, to know, like, to have the okay of Eli. So it was really cool. Like, he was also like, it's not that he, like, he was almost co-directing, you know?
Never, not really. That was really Nicolas's show, and he's an amazing talent, and I'm excited for genre fans to discover him and then go back and watch his. I mean, by the time when I was his age, I hadn't made one movie yet. He's already shot six.
Yeah, but he got her, so he wins.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you very much.